Hey folks, we're recording this on Monday the 22nd. It will air on Thursday. At that point, we will be 103 days from Election Day. I am thrilled today to be joined on the Lincoln Project podcast by my good friend Michael Steele. Let's get to it.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Lincoln Project podcast. As you can imagine, since we are recording this only 24 hours after President Biden turned over the reins of the 2024 campaign to Vice President Kamala Harris, things have changed a little bit. I am joined today by my close friend, one of the wisest political observers you could hope to meet, and a guy who knows a stupid campaign move when he sees one. And the stupid campaign move this time, I want to start out with this. Trump's team didn't have a plan B, Michael.
Whoa.
They didn't have a plan B. They built up campaign with $1 billion worth of earned media around saying Joe Biden is very old. Now what?
Now what? So, hey, first off, Rick, it's always good to be in your house, my friend. I appreciate you, brother. You know that. As I like to say, you are both the knife and the stiletto, just all kind of coming in and stepping and cutting and crutching. Love your work. Love being with you. They did not have a plan B. And I think that that's very telling. While on the one hand, a lot of folks were marveling at the sophistication compared to 2016.
Right.
And certainly 2020 of this campaign, this more serious, it's more focused. Donald Trump seems to be more disciplined. He can, you know, can hold that gaze for longer than 3 seconds and before he starts talking about electric batteries and sharks.
Right.
But they did not anticipate this. There's some storylines out there about a tweet that they put out in December of 23 that Joe Biden wouldn't be the nominee, but they were talking about all these other folks. So if you were thinking that, then you would at least think if you were serious about this age thing, you thought it was a play, that you would at least sort of account for it in your planning.
Right.
But it is very clear they did not. They're flat-footed right now. They're all over the place in their messaging. Donald Trump is rage tweeting at 2 a.m. That gives you everything
always
you need
a healthy
to know.
Sign. You know, the other night, Sunday night, I was up at like, I don't know, 1:45 in the morning and I'm tweeting away. And Renee reaches over. She's like, no, put it away. You're done now.
Go to bed.
You're having fun, but you're done now. I'm like, probably wise. I'm getting a little punchy. But Trump, I mean, you're right. He's been out on Truth Social all day long.
Yeah.
Last night, all night. And he's banging away. And it's funny because they seem to think they're still running against Joe Biden.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they seem to think that the campaign is still about Joe Biden, which I find it baffling that they not only they didn't have a plan B, but now that they know that plan A isn't going to work, they're still trying to run plan A.
Yeah.
And well, I don't know how you do that.
Well, okay. You and I are you know, fairly good at what we do. And so I understand, and I'm sure you do too, and at a certain level, yeah, she was the vice president during the Biden administration. So yeah, we're going to want to connect that dot to her. All right.
Yeah.
So policy wise, we get that. So you can go ahead and rant and rave about the border, but her comeback is, well, dude, we signed off on a conservative border bill. I don't get it. You killed it. I didn't. You know, they can rant and rave about a lot of other things, but to your broader point, she is not the 81-year-old white guy that you're running against. You're now running against a 59-year-old black female who was a prosecutor. And the meme that's gone up, you know, the prosecutor and the felon.
Yep.
That whole theme now is ahead of them in this narrative.
That's right.
So they did not account for it. I mean, look, at a baseline, Rick, the Saturday after the Biden implosion, that Thursday, smart strategists in the Trump world would have been, we need to develop because this could go south and Kamala is going to be the choice. But right. what they fell into was the white trap, is what I call it. The white man thinking that, oh, well, they're the, you know, Gavin Newsom is a better play, is a stronger play. Governor Beshear is a stronger play. They can bypass Kamala because she's so weak and no one likes her. I'm like, bitch, please, you cannot bypass the first black female vice president of the country.
That shit was never gonna fly. I had a senior Democrat right after all the panic started, right after the debate, and he said to me, he goes, let me tell you, if this goes wrong and there's an open convention, on the first night, the progs try to nominate, you know, the Jamal Bowman or some crazy person, right? Right? On the second night, you have a big old floor fight and somehow Gavin squeaks it out. He goes, and on the third night, every African-American delegate goes, fuck you, and walks out. How's that going to work out? I'm like, you know your party well, my friend. but I mean, look, it strikes me that we're going to have a real contrast here in the coming weeks of her energy level, her ability to get out there and make a case with some joy and some energy and some fun, because she is kind of funny. She's got a kind of like goofy edge to her that I think we haven't really seen that in a campaign since George right. W. And people right. forget about that. They liked that he was kind of a goof on the campaign trail. People in the crowd liked it that he was like, you know, engaging with them at a level that felt genuine.
Right.
And I do think also we have not scored this out yet. Now, I've got all my math nerds working on this problem right now. We have not scored out what this is going to do to African-American women on the turnout model, which that was already going to be high. I predict now it is going to shatter every conceivable record.
This, I'm going to tell you, I'll put it to you. I'd love to come back to this conversation after the election. This is going to be bigger than Barack Obama.
I think you're right. I believe it in my gut.
It's going to be bigger than Barack Obama.
Yep.
Because think about the historic nature of this. We are 2 years off of celebrating 250 years.
That's right.
Of this country.
That's right.
And to have an African-American woman.
It's astounding.
Leading that national conversation and celebration. Dude.
That's arc of history right there.
That's your arc of history. It is a leveling up of the American story.
Yep.
That out of the ashes of slavery, 250 years later, a black woman can lead the celebration of this country's history moving into the future. Dude, this is bigger than Barack.
I think it is too. And I think there's a certain more relatable nature of hers, to the culture. And look, as I told somebody this morning, I was like, I will take Beyonce and Taylor Swift and the rest and Charlie XCX and the rest of Hollywood and the entertainment world versus Lee Greenwood, Kid Rock, and a bunch of washed up wrestlers from the 1980s. She's gonna win that culture war. She's gonna win that culture war.
What was up with that sort of, you know, steroid-laden testosterone?
You know what? I think that's some sort of weird Trump thing that he thinks he's connecting with young men or something. But I'm like, y'all, Hulk Hogan was in the ring when I was in my 30s.
Yes.
You know, it's been a minute. But I do think she's got this ability to do something. I think you're right. It's bigger than Barack because it's also the 5.9 million South Asian voters in this country who she also has a cultural claim to. It's also young women who were iffy about Joe Biden some of the time. And I think that is going to drive that number up to the ceiling. And, you know, I just feel like there's a moment here where if you capture the culture in an election like this, it can be a destiny altering moment for our country and for her. And you know, there was a couple of articles in the last week where Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita were picking out curtains. They were bragging about the win. They were going, oh, wow, we're going to get 350 yeah. Electoral College votes. I don't think they're doing that anymore, are they?
No, they're not. They're not. But here's something I think very, very important to note. First, to the point you made about young women and young right. voters and the movement that's starting to come back around to Joe Biden, to the Harris side of the Biden-Harris right. equation. And that is what we've seen just in the response monetarily. The big donors are sitting on the sidelines doing what big donors do, playing with their dicks and thinking right. it's bigger than it really is, okay? And that's just what they do. Okay, God bless them. And we know what their end game is, all right? It's not that far removed from Trump. They just want what they want, and if you can give it to me, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. But it's small dollar donors, the grandmas and grandpas, the young college co-ed, the working mom and dad, who have given her in the 24 hours, we're not even at the time we're having this conversation,
right.
we're just over the 24-hour mark of this changeover, and they have raised $92 million. That is a phenomenal amount of love and excitement
yep.
for a campaign which 24 hours before was literally life support wasn't giving it any help.
It was barely sustaining itself. And watching how quickly this has happened tells me two things. They understand that what's at stake in the race, the small dollar donors might get it better than the big donors in some ways. They understand what's at stake in this race. They understand if it's Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and Project 2025, most of those people are going to be in a very bad situation.
That's right.
Starting in January of this next year. And they get it. And they get what's on the line. And so, yeah, and probably by the time we wrap this up and put this out, folks, it will cross $100 million.
Yeah.
I can't express to you how hard that is to raise that much money. It's really hard to raise that much money.
And he knows.
Believe me, y'all, I spend a lot of time asking rich donors for money to put our ads on the air, to fight this fight to peel off those Republicans. Now, I will confess, the last 48 hours have been much easier.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean,
well, look, it reminds me of 2010.
Going
into 2010,
yep.
a lot of the large donors left me hanging and dry at the RNC.
Yep.
The Bush dollar, big dollar donors
right.
moved off. Karl Rove set up his 527
right.
and took a lot of that. And I had to, what I created was the small dollar donor program, which the RNC never had.
Right.
Fortunately, over the next 18 months, raised about 170 some million dollars.
I remember.
And that ultimately topped off at $192 million
mm-hmm.
of small dollar money. Big dollars came in at the end when they thought, oh, it looks like they're going to win. But this is the energy. This speaks to the energy this
yep.
change up in the Democratic ticket has created, which is important. To your other point
right.
about LaCivita and measuring the drapes and the attitude and arrogance of assuming this vote is in the bag for them. What will be important now are the narratives about the outcome of this election before the election is,
yep.
is happens and before the votes are cast.
Yep.
We know through Project 2025, through other means, what this end game is. There's a reason why Donald Trump and all his ilk are out here talking about elections being stolen, what's happening on the ground in state boards of elections and county boards of elections is important to pay attention to.
100%.
There will be a fight, folks, at the end of this battle come November. This election day will not be the end of this campaign.
Nope.
It will really, in one sense, be the beginning, and it will matter. So this is why the work that is done at Lincoln Project is so important for your support. I'm not, Rick didn't know I was going here.
I'm grateful.
I'm just telling you, folks, all the tools in the toolbox right now matter.
Yeah.
Because we will have to overwhelm this fucking system with your vote in November.
Yep.
And support is going to be needed at all, at the think tank level, at the grassroots
level.
Absolutely. So it's really important to understand what's being set up. And with the changeover to Kamala, now you're going to top layer in race and gender. It's going to matter what happens next. And then what happens next are the efforts that, you know, I was proud to be a part of in 2020 with Lincoln Project. We'll be proud to be a part of again in this election cycle. So it's important that we all understand what's at stake.
I think we're going to see, and when it comes to the attacks, I also think you and I both know how Donald Trump behaves.
Yep.
And Donald Trump has been steaming for the last 24 hours about her. And we know one thing he cannot resist. Everything about her is kryptonite to Donald Trump. She's a woman. She's good looking. She's smart. She's a prosecutor. She's black. He hates all of those things. He hates all of those things. And the shit you guys are going to start hearing from Donald Trump's friends and supporters and his media outlets about her are going to be disgusting. They're going to be racist. They're going to be as scurrilous and sexist as you can imagine. And you know what? You should all look at this through the eyes of the fact that the guy making the accusations is a goddamn rapist and a felon and a criminal and a liar of the highest order. Yep. But they are going to get ugly. They are going to get ugly pretty soon, right? I mean, they're going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy. And the Democrats, yes, still have to go through a process. They've got to formalize all of this.
Right.
But the consolidation around Kamala's candidacy and the laying on of hands, if you will, by Joe Biden, by endorsing her, and now Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all the others, you know, Jim Clyburn, all of that process will play itself out and will be what it is. But at the same time, we as activists on behalf of democracy, defenders of democracy,
right,
the rule of law, and the safety and security of our ballot boxes, we have to get prepared too. And that's what I don't want us to lose sight of, because the top of the ticket may have changed, the fight hasn't. And right. That's important.
I think, you know, I think it's important to remember that the people they had doing the election conspiracy last time were largely pretty clownish individuals.
Right.
I suspect they've got a lot of money floating around, and they've hired a lot more serious people to try to do this one. I hope the Democrats are preparing for this. I know we're starting to do some outside work on it, but I suspect they're going to try to do this in a much more systematic way and in a way that relies less on crazy legal theories from John
right.
Eastman and more on Republican state attorney generals,
yeah,
more on Republican legislative bodies, more on friendly media in these states than they did last time. I'm concerned about it, which is also, you know, I told somebody this morning, I was having a conversation with someone, and I said, and she asked me, it was a person, by the way, African-American woman I know from Georgia very well, deeply involved in politics. And she said, I'm going to tell you, Rick, she goes, there's 100,000 votes of professional African-American women in Atlanta. They're going to all be out for her. It's going to change the ballgame. You got to come back to Georgia. So we're probably going to go back to Georgia, which is
yeah.
legitimate. But she said, she goes, but on the other hand, we better hope that Brad and everybody else and the governor stick to their guns one more time. And nobody should count on that, given the intimidation these people are going to try to bring into the system as we go into this next election cycle.
Well, I think that's a very important point that you make there, because Georgia's now in play.
Yep.
In this race. It was doubtful with Biden, to be honest.
I agree.
But now it's in play.
Yeah.
North Carolina is in play.
Oh, yeah. Nevada's back in play. I mean, this
Nevada is back in play. Arizona is back in play.
You know, there was a funny story the other day from that Tim Alberta piece where La Civita and Tony Fabrizio are bragging, oh, we've got 20 or 30 different paths to victory. I heard a lot of door slamming when Joe Biden made that announcement to those paths to victory. And if Georgia's in play, and a case was made for me today, which I'm still skeptical of, folks. For the record, I'm still skeptical, even though I have done more races in Florida than anybody you've ever met. The argument was made to me today. You look at the Caribbean voters, who also another line in which she can claim lineage. You look at African-American voters and Caribbean voters in Florida, and you end up putting the state of Florida back into a position, if not competitive for her, but at least where Trump has to spend money on defense now. And
I want to see that. I want to see that operation first.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah, trust me.
I'm with you.
There's
a little.
Listen, Michael. In 2016, I got a hold of the Hillary people, and I'm like, okay, there's 360,000 new Puerto Rican voters in Florida. What are you doing about it? And I got the Indiana Jones answer. It was like, we have top men on the job. I'm like, who? Top men? Who? So, you know, we're in a world now, I think, where the map is scrambled, the election is scrambled. I don't think Donald Trump did himself any favors at that convention.
Right, right.
And I don't think we've talked since the whole, like, assassination thing, which no. I'm now not calling an assassination. I'm calling it an attempted murder. Because this kid was fucked up. This kid was sick. He was a lost boy. He's one of these kids that God forbid, you know, he was also trying to find where Joe Biden was going to be. You know, he could have walked into a church or a mosque or a synagogue or an elementary school and engage in the same kind of horror. No excusing the event, but this wasn't like a planned assassination by the deep state.
Right, right. I agree. I think that's right. I think more and more of the analysis of what we know, and, you know, the Secret Service Director Cheadle, she's getting appropriately grilled, and she should really help this whole effort by resigning.
It would be smart for her to do that.
But I think at this point she goes and says, Mr. President, you know, this happened on my watch. I cannot in good conscience stay as a leader of this organization, because our number one responsibility is to make sure this does not happen on any watch. But I think when you pull back some more of this curtain, putting aside the bullshit coming from MAGA about what this was, and, you know, God help us, now they've linked the Iranians to plots against Trump, and that's all well and good. We know those plots are there. We know why they were there.
Sure.
But this kid is not an Iranian. He's not an Iranian, you know,
agent.
He is a young man who had been horrifically bullied throughout most of his high school career.
Yep.
And he wanted to make a statement, and he didn't care who he made the statement against. And I think more and more of the story reveals that, and it exposes even more so than an international plot by the Iranians or any other government to assassinate any political leader, that this 20-year-old misguided youth had that kind of access. And could scope out the site days before.
You know, you and I have both, Michael, worked at and been at any number of presidential events with the service there, with MAG, with the perimeter. And I'm sorry, there's something broken in that organization if they end up with a kid being able to come up within 150 yards.
Yes, with a high-powered rifle.
President. I mean, and I look... I shoot long range for fun, and I hunt. I shoot at 400 and 500 yards, not feet. We're just lucky this kid was a fucking idiot. But the service should have the minute they saw this guy with a rifle, the local law enforcement said something on the radio. They should have taken Trump off the stage.
Off the stage.
I mean,
I was
at an event one time where there was a bullshit threat phoned in, and they walked W off the stage.
Yeah.
They just walked him off. They went to the holding area, went to the secure room. But this is not excusable. I don't know. That's a whole separate thing. All I know, though, is Donald Trump is still wearing a giant safety pad on his head. Now, you know, a week later, for something that clearly did not require emergency medical attention to that degree, but here we are.
I got a lot of shit from the likes of Sebastian Gorka, who jumped up in my face.
And oh, mine too.
I just looked at him and go, dude, you definitely need to get a diaper because you're shitting all of your on your pants right now. Because I just asked a simple question.
Right.
Where's the medical report?
Sure.
Can we see a medical report to see the extent of the injury? Did it require stitches? Will cosmetic surgery be required? Did he lose a part of his ear? Because after all, this was shot from an AR-15. All right. So if anybody knows anything about weapons and the bullets that are used at an AR-15, I don't care if it's a .256.
It's a 5.56, and the bullets from the AR.
That's a big bullet.
They tumble. Okay. They tumble. They start to spin and flip around in the air. And look, I own ARs. I understand the physics of this. I'm not saying it was faked, folks. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying he got extremely lucky. The graze must have been so incidental that it didn't do the damage that, I mean, millimeters.
Right. So millimeters. That's all I'm asking. Just like, the hospital didn't do a press conference, still hasn't. His campaign hasn't put out a medical report, still hasn't. So I'm just saying.
Well, and of course, Ronnie Jackson, who's there now taking care of him.
Oh, yeah, Ronnie Jackson.
Yeah, that fucking guy.
Not to feel good. Right, okay. Sure, but, yeah.
You know, Michael, I think that in a weird way, the MAGA world at that moment thought Trump is now invulnerable to political criticism. He is going to absolutely win this thing. I remember I saw one of his supporters tweet out, like, he will now win 400 electoral college votes.
Yes.
But it turns out it's just a sick kid, just a messed up kid.
Just a messed up kid.
And I think that has faded fast. And I think the convention speech didn't help him. They sold that speech as, he's going to be more mature and this has made him more existential. And he's, and yet 30 minutes in, what do we get? Sharks.
And I'm sorry. I get the personal reflection, and I put reflection in quotation marks, that first 20 to 30 minutes was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But sort of granular detail of there is blood everywhere, and I felt the,
right. If you're going to try to play the tough guy hero, just say, a little thing in my ear, whatever.
Yeah, a little thing in my ear got shot. I'm good, you know?
Yeah,
You know, I stand here now ready to take, that's the macho image of Trump that everybody
I was afraid of that speech. I was afraid he was going to do it right.
That's where he was going to go?
I was afraid he was going to do it right. I was like, God damn it. He's going to have, they're going to finally convince him to not be a fucking idiot. And he's going to do the speech right. And then again, at 30 minutes, I could see him. He shifted. He went on the podium like that.
Right.
And that's his bullshitting tell. That's his bullshitting tell, Michael. He leans over and he's like, and then the laser beams and the sharks and the. Well, Michael, it's going to be a long run. I'm going to talk to you again any number of times on this show between now and Election Day. I love being on your pod the other day. Folks, Michael Steele's podcast over at The Bulwark is outstanding. Tune in, like, subscribe, check it out. It is amazing. Michael, tell folks where else they can find you.
So you can find me on the weekend. On the weekend.
On the weekend.
The weekend is at the weekend MSNBC, our weekend show every Saturday and Sunday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern with Simone Sanders Townsend and Alicia Menendez. It's a great conversation.
It is.
I'm looking forward to getting this brother on the show.
I volunteer his tribute.
There you go. But you can catch me there, and it's always a lot of fun on the weekend.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. We'll see you again soon.
All right, my friend. Take care now.
Good luck.